Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Audio Signals Podcast, hosted by Marco Ciappelli. If you learned something new, and this conversation made you think, then take a moment to rate this show and add it to your favorite podcast player. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and share this episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. We invite you to come back for more stories and follow Marco Ciappelli on his social media as he continues musing on stories, storytelling, and storytellers.
Alrighty, here we go. This is Marco Ciappelli. Welcome to another episode of Audio Signal Podcast, where we talk about stories and storytellers. And usually it's a book lately, but it could be music, song, movies, art, painting, photography. I think anything we do every day tells a story about us, either we realize it or not. Today, again, it is a book. And it's going to be packed of stories about the very little one, I'm understanding. But it's a book that I don't think they will read at this time. I think it's more for parents. And I'm excited because I'm going to welcome here a member of the Mentor Project, which is often happen to have on because it's full of amazing people and with definitely a lot of story to tell. So without further ado, Dr. Alison Escalante is here with me. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It's a pleasure. We've been talking about this for a while now, but we had to wait the right time for your book to come out. So tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and then we'll get into what this book in particular is about.
Well, I'm a pediatrician and a mom, and I've been working for the last, two decades on what can be done about the anxiety epidemic that we're seeing affecting parents and especially our kids. And as a mom, it's something that I feel very much too. The constant pressure on our kids to be high achievers, the sense of failure that they often have at a young age, and the pressure on parents. And it's a lot.
So this anxiety, I feel like it's driven by, I'm going to throw it there, social media probably a lot. Before it used to be magazine and TV show. Now, honestly, I have this conversation when I talk about society and technology a lot. It's, yeah, there is a lot of pressure from people that are not even presenting themselves as celebrities so that you can actually say, okay, these are personality and actors or models or whatever it is. This is people that look like us, but they maybe portray themselves in the perfect way and allow us to have a different and maybe alterated perception of reality. Is that what you're referring to?
You know, when I was in college, I had the opportunity to study ideological and cultural history at Princeton. And one of the things that we learn is that, first of all, ideas change history, change cultures, but they also move through culture. And when I say culture, I'm referring to many things, but specifically I'm talking about those held beliefs that everyone takes for granted. It's like an operating system. So we all think it's true. And then influential things will happen and those ideas change and the culture will shift with it, but everyone still assumes that it's true and it's always been true. And how those ideas are dispersed and sort of, you know, shape our lives will depend on the technology of the time. We enforce them in different ways on each other. But there's always been a way for us to enforce the held cultural beliefs on each other, whether it was in the Middle Ages, putting someone in the stocks and throwing tomatoes at them if they violated a social norm. And now we troll them on the internet, you know?
Yeah, the game has definitely changed. And sometimes it is about loading a new operating system, which usually, culturally speaking, take longer than the social media or the real computer operating system. Our society takes definitely longer to change. And I want to dive into the book with this thought. What inspired you? Was it part of this very quick change, the pace of change that we're facing now as a society, and maybe certain standard classic way to raise a kid, like maybe grandma would face, it's changed, the game has changed too fast?
I think that's part of it. I mean, I think that when you look at some of the roots of the parenting culture right now, Jessica Gross just wrote about this beautifully in her book, Screaming on the Inside. Mm. And this really started a lot of what we're seeing now, the idea that parents are not really capable of raising their kids and they need to seek the right expert advice. This started over 200 years ago. Mm. But the abrupt change that really shift from old school parenting to the helicopter parent, both of which types of parenting had negatives for child development and some positives and good goals. That really was the late 80s and 90s, and it happened very quickly. And what we see now is really just an increasingly intensified version of what started in the 90s.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it's in a very fast acceleration. And again, living in the world of technology, I feel like it's not actually slowing down.
Like, oh no, it's speeding up.
1 year now, it sounds more things happening a year now than in the 90s, which was already a lot faster than where it was happening in maybe in the 70s. And I remember when I was studying sociology of communication and mass media, back in the 90s, actually, there was a professor that was bringing this example that at the time the internet wasn't that popular. So the edition of the New York Times of a Sunday edition would have already more information than the average person will receive in the middle age, let's say, from an entire lifetime. Now, I'm going to take that and bring it to today, and it's probably going to be mind-blowing.
That is a really good point. And yet, when you think about that, that's a really good point, because I distinctly remember, you know, Sunday afternoon was the New York Times Sunday edition for mm-hmm. ritual for my parents, and they would spend hours reading it, and we weren't really supposed to bother them, and we didn't have video games to entertain ourselves, right? But now we take in our information in sound bites, in tweet length, bits. It's always startling to me how often, even on platforms like LinkedIn, where there's more of a little bit more professional level, people might respond to, say, an article I've written in Forbes. They'll respond with a lengthy comment without opening the article. And I know
based
they
on
have-
the headline.
Based on the headline. And I know they haven't even read the article. So there's no context, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, yep. Very often those sorts of responses are, of course, people educating me as to why they think I'm wrong. And I'm like, well, maybe read it before you decide. But that's where we are now, right?
Exactly. So yeah, maybe based on that, and we haven't mentioned the title of the book yet. So I'm gonna do it now. Like, Sig C. Start, How to Be the Parents Your Child Needs in the World That Won't Stop Pushing, Science-Based Method in the Three Simple Steps. So it seems to me that is very concrete. It's kind of like based on the senses that a mother has, or a dad has, or even a grandparents. I don't know who this book is for, but let's get to that. You kind of bring it back to more basic human instinct and compare with this never-ending amount of advice you'll get from strangers online.
So that's interesting you bring that up. I just wrote an article about that in Forbes last week.
I didn't know, I swear.
the question of that struggle with parents, right? Do we take expert advice? But then there's so much expert advice, and a great deal of it disagrees with each other. And it can be very anxiety provoking, because generally the message is do it right or you mess up your kids. And then, or do we trust our instincts? That's usually the available options. But trusting our instincts is a challenge, because usually when we do that, we don't really have instincts as humans, it turns out. We have informed understandings based on our past experiences. So what we do is we repeat the past, or we overreact to whatever our parents did. And either way, it's not skillful, wise parenting. So I offer a third option. And what I love about my option is, instead of having to learn an extensive theory before you start parenting, you actually change your approach and mindset by doing. And so what we do is, every time you feel anxiety as a parent, you sigh, see, and start. So, and you're right, it is about the senses. And with sigh, we're tapping into some very fundamental neuroscience, which is that when we sigh, when we take a big breath and then let it out long and slow, that long, slow out breath sends a message to the nervous system that you are safe, you can connect, and it actually brings our higher level thinking on board, so that we can step out of anxiety, step out of that feeling that we're being attacked or we're under threat, and really connect with our own bodies and our kids. So it's the neuroscience concept of becoming present. And you know, it feels different when someone's really with you in the room versus when they're in the room but they're not with you. And that's what we're bringing online when we sigh.
You know, it makes me think about when my mom used to tell me, count till three before you answer or before you freak out about something. It's kind of like that 3 seconds. It is that moment of, okay, you know, hold on a second.
That's right. So sigh incorporates that sense of pause. Uh-huh. Absolutely. But, you know, very often as a parent, when we pause, we still have all of those shoulds in our head running on circle. You should do this. You should do that. You shouldn't do that other thing. You're going to mess up your kid for life, right? So just pausing isn't enough the way we parent today. We need to hack that nervous system and say, you're okay. You're here and you're okay. And to move out of that shoulding, I call it a should storm. It's a storm of shoulds that are constantly bombarding parents that we internalize and that makes us feel overwhelmed and incapable. And when we sigh and connect with our bodies with that beginning of calm, we actually start to feel capable pretty quickly, because if you try it with me, you'll notice how much better your body feels. You can feel it happening. I'm also a big fan of sighing 3 times if I'm really wound up, because I find when I'm worked up, it takes me 3 times to really start to calm down.
Yeah. Definitely some meditation right there. So you do that, and then you don't really have much time to make those decisions. It's not that you're, you know, thinking, how am I going to write the next chapter of the book? You probably need to act. But before you do that, what do you do? You see.
Right? Well, this method works in both places. It was designed it for under pressure, because, you know, at the time my kids were young, super active, and they just didn't give me time to think much at all. But it also can be used in a deliberate way to work through a situation when you are with your kids or when you're not with your kids. You can actually think through using the method. But yes, after you sigh, which a lot of parents tell me is easy to do because they're like, Doc, I sigh at my kids all the time anyway. That's great. Right? And that's it. It's built in. It's an automatic breathing method that we have in our body. So then you see. Now, C is your moment of mindfulness. And we've all been told like it's great to meditate and we should do, you know, mindful yoga for an hour. But many parents, whether the kids are young and at that busy age or the kids are in high school and you're driving them around to activities all the time and there's barely time for anything else. That moment of mindfulness turns out can be very powerful. The science shows us that micro moments of mindfulness can be just as effective as meditating. So that's the encouragement for parents. And so when you see you're mindfully noticing what's going on, notice your child's body language, notice the situation, notice if you still need to, notice what shoulds have been in your head so you can put them aside a little bit. Notice if there's an overwhelming sensory environment. Maybe your kid, you know, they get worked up with sensory and there's a jackhammer going on outside. Well, maybe that's why they're irritable right now, right? C is not meant to prioritize vision. I just chose it because of an alliteration. It's really that moment of observation without immediately trying to do anything. And that's what most of us do as parents is we have a should in our head and we jump in and do something. And
can you give me an example? I mean, yeah. to the audience, some example of this should storm. Like what are some of this should that you feel based on your experience and your practice are maybe, you know, the top five right now.
Okay, because I could easily give you like 100, but
take the whole podcast. So let's do 5 or 10.
Let's say you've just had a baby. You should breastfeed. You should do, you know, you should never let the baby cry. Your baby should be sleeping by now. What's wrong with you, right? Mm-hmm. Your child is a toddler. You should be facilitating their development. You should be maximizing their development. You should be doing this or that. You should be making sure they behave perfectly in public without being harsh. You should teach them emotion coaching. You should explain more to them. And by the way, none of these shoulds are, some of these shoulds are incorrect, just so you know. Or, you know, you've got a teenager. Well, you should be making sure that they're in the top AP classes and you should be making sure that they're maximizing their resume so they can get into college. And if they don't get into the best college, their life will be ruined forever and you're a terrible parent and you failed. Mm-hmm. And also you should make sure that they feel good emotionally because we know mental health is important and so forth. Right.
And it keeps going. I mean, I like how you use the chronological, you know, growing pattern. But then where you're stopping, I'm thinking like, well, then you become an adolescent or a younger adult and you still are bombarded by a ton of should. Now you should be, you know, saving money. By now you should have a job. By now you should, said who?
And that's right? That's why I've talked about the should storm in other contexts too, right? Yeah. I've presented it at professional conferences and, you know, leadership conferences and things like that. But I think it's most harmful in that parent-child relationship where it really disrupts that connection between parent and child that is a building block of resilience and a happy life for the child. And the kids start feeling it in elementary school. You know, I have so many kids who are so worried about their grades, worried about their level of achievement, you know, so the kids are in their own should storm. And that's actually a chapter in the book as well, what it's like for them. And then parents will tell you parenting does not stop when they go to college. You know, there's a continued level of involvement with parents in this generation. And the should storm doesn't end, you know.
Because as a parent, you're always a parent, even when your kid is 50 years old.
Right.
And so
that's
you
right.
should be giving your advice. Okay, that makes sense. It applies. But I can imagine this situation that you're describing as a young parents, I mean, a fresh parent, and everywhere, magazine, TV, social media, parents, friends, everybody's probably has the solution and the advice for everything. So
I have stories in the book about women being accosted while just, you know, they're on maternity leave, they're out for a brief walk in the neighborhood, and they're accosted by a neighbor. My husband, I told in my TEDx talk about this, my husband was accosted in the grocery store by a woman who, even though it was 95 degrees outside, was yelling at my husband because the baby didn't have socks on, right? Mm-hmm. Turns out that's a thing. I had so many people write in after the TEDx talk telling me their stories about people yelling at them about the need for baby socks in the grocery store. And as a pediatrician, I can tell you, that's not a thing. If it's 95 degrees outside, baby's feet are fine. It's okay.
Oh, God. So how do you filter through all of this and decide then, you know, what the action is? How do you free your mind?
That's right. And so far with Sciency, you know, this is different from other parenting techniques, but a lot of other parenting methods mention a pause, a breath, a moment of mindfulness, right? What's different about Sci-C start is when you get to start, because now we are going to become scientists. And so start is where you basically run your own little experiment and you say, okay, I've sighed, I've done my C, I've gathered some information. Now I'm going to start. Maybe I start thinking about how to do things differently. Maybe I start processing that advice I read that actually seems like it fits here, right? Maybe I start applying something I've learned about my kid before. Maybe I start nothing. Nothing is one of my favorite things to start because I tend to be, you know, like I'm supposed to make people better for a living, right? So I tend to be a fixer. And so for me, pausing and starting nothing can be very helpful for my kids because instead of jumping in and reacting, I'm giving them space. And it's amazing, especially as the kids get a little older, but even when they were younger, how that space can actually, they can then have an opportunity to work things out themselves. But whatever you start, you're learning. So you start something, you start nothing. You start the right thing and you've gained information. You have just run a successful experiment. You know that that worked with that kid on this day in this situation and you file that away. But maybe you start something and it backfires and you say, oh, I should have done it differently, man. Well, we know what to do if we feel a should. You sigh, see, and start again. So it becomes a continuous learning loop, and it has some really powerful effects. Parents tell me that it moves them from a feeling of constant anxiety to one of confidence because they build skills quickly. You shift your relationships with mistakes. So it's no longer, because see, parenting today is about getting it perfect. You're getting it, you got to get it right, right? Which is 100% wrong and a bad example for our kids, right? Too much pressure. When we're starting in an informed way and we're gathering that information, now it's not, I mean, is it a mistake or is it a learning, right? You're running an experiment, you're gathering information. The more you do it, the more you learn, the more confidence you build. And suddenly, instead of being hard on yourself all the time, you've got this more positive, open outlook, right? Mm-hmm. And guess what that does for your kids? Because our kids model themselves on us. And so even if we tell them, don't be so hard on yourself, honey, it's normal to make mistakes. If they see us with that perfectionistic parenting, they pick it up. They know what they're really supposed to do. They're really supposed to be perfect, right? Because that's what we're doing. But if we show them, no, I'm just learning. I'm growing with you and I'm learning with you. And, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but I'm always in the game and I'm always growing. I mean, isn't that the fundamental basis of a healthy life that we're trying to teach our kids?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going with my brain because it's really like I'm picturing as you started this lab, where the difference between theory and practice, right? You need both. Sure, take the advice, but don't take it as a certainty, because it may not work. And until you know why it doesn't work, you're not really getting better. I mean, it makes total sense to me. It's okay if your little experiment doesn't work. You're not perfection. It's the source probably of a lot of that anxiety. I mean, I'm connecting all the point. Reread the title right now as you're saying this incredible push to perfection. It's not healthy. I don't know what we're doing. It's just not.
No, and this allows us then to change our relationship with our instincts and parenting advice, because suddenly those become tools, right? Mm-hmm. And I can use them when it makes sense, and I cannot use them when it doesn't make sense, you know? And SciSee Start is never about a parent out on their own, like, supposed to know everything. Of course not. I'm a pediatrician. Yes. I want you to ask me for advice if you're having trouble. But SciSee Start gives you an approach, a relationship, and a way to process, you know, the information you're given. And it also allows us to meet specific child's needs, because there is no one size fits all parenting. And, you know, kids can be different. In my own family, I call my kids sun and moon because they're so, so different, mm-hmm. right? And what they need in a particular situation can be very different based on their personality and temperament.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it a moment, like an aha moment that really made you think, I have to write this book?
Like. Yeah, it's actually, so I was feeling like there was something that needed to be done for a decade, you know, and I was reading every parenting book out there and trying to find the thing to give the parents in my practice that was going to help, right? Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of lousy books out there, and there were a lot of really good books out there, but very often their advice was too detailed for me to remember in the moment, right? Like when I was a busy working mom. I was on call. I had meetings after work. I had kids running back and forth to daycare, and I'm trying to be present for them. And I can't remember all of that, right? Even when it was really good advice. So I knew I needed something. And I didn't realize I was doing this intuitively without words for it. And then one day I was visiting with, a mom who was, she had a new baby, and she was going through the breastfeeding hell that so many moms go through. And I shared with her, it was like one of those intuitive pops. It just came out of my mouth. Like all this research came out in these words, and I shared these steps with her, and I said, why don't you try that? And a month later, she said, this is a direct quote, before I had only anxiety and now I had confidence. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh my gosh, do I have it? Have I found it? And so I started then, you know, putting it out there and seeing what parents thought. And I put it out in the TEDx, and I got so much feedback of how mm-hmm. helpful it was that I said, okay, we need to really do a deeper dive on this. Mm-hmm. And so the book is full of the scientific backing for those who are interested, some specific techniques out there that are really complementary based on recent science, like how to do collaborative problem solving with your kids, you know, or how to have a successful family meeting using SciSee Start, you know, so that you can build that togetherness, how to appropriately repair with your child, you know, like when you have, there are mistakes and then there are mistakes, right? And if I've hurt my child, I screamed something I regret, right? Mm. I need to seek repair. I need to apologize and reconnect in a way that's safe for my child, and they know I'm taking responsibility. So we have, you know, there's stuff about that. And there's stuff about parents dealing with some incredibly tricky situations, right? Like bullying or some of the stuff that comes up for members of the LGBTQ plus community, you know, or some of the things like that, you know?
Right. So it's not just for, I kind of started this with the young parents thinking about very little children, but it's actually, it applies to everybody. What I like is it also applies to yourself. And that's great. Almost a book for everyone, even if you don't have children.
Well, I hope so. I mean, one of the groups that often gets left out of parenting books is folks with, you know, who don't have endless energy, patience to apply parenting techniques, right? And so I wanted a book that included the parents in my practice who were working two or three jobs to make ends meet, right? Mm-hmm. And were falling off their feet at the end of the day, or who were dealing with their own illnesses, like battling cancer or dealing with a chronic illness. And I, you know, or the single moms who are just run ragged trying to do everything and told by society that everything's their fault, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then I had to test and see if it was real. Was this just another too good to be true parenting technique? And so, as you know, over 2 years ago, I got sick with COVID and I developed a severe case of long COVID myself. And I became disabled. I haven't been able to see patients or practice pediatrics in over 2 years. And much of the time I've had to learn how to parent from bed, because I can't get out of bed or I can't think straight to have a clear conversation with my kids. Mm-hmm. You know, and the whole family's reorganized around taking care of me, which was a major shocker because as moms, we see ourselves as the one taking care of everyone else. And even in that, even with like times when the brain fog was really bad, where I couldn't remember much or even hold much of a conversation, Psi C Start was clear enough that I could remember that. And it helped me connect with my kids, even when I couldn't be the one taking care of their physical needs, right? Even when they were the ones, my younger one makes great scrambled eggs. So he would bring those to me in bed and feed me sometimes, right? And like, even then, I was able to stay present with them and connect with them. And I do feel like it's deepened our relationship in some surprising ways. So I hope I'm, you know, putting my money where my mouth is. And I hope it supports other parents as much as it's supported our family, you know?
Yeah. You know, as we get close to the end, I do have one final question, but before we get to that, a reflection on what you just said, and tell me if I'm wrong, but what I'm getting from this whole technique is that it's a technique to find your own technique. There are some pillars, right, that just say that there is not just one way to do it right. There are many ways to do it right, and every kid is different. Every family is different. Every mom has to deal with different thing. So you're not just doing like, this is for this size. You're saying something like that. Everybody's going to find something that could apply and could make their parenting better, no matter what their situation is.
That's right. And there's a lot in the book, you know, talking about different kinds of kids and what those needs might be. But this isn't meant to be the book where it's like, ignore all the other parenting books, just trust this one. This is meant to say, hey, you know, let's say your child has autism and there's specific things that you're working on with your occupational therapist. Great, apply those. But Psi C Start as you do, and you'll apply it more effectively and more wisely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so my last question, I'm thinking this. And I'm not asking to pick your favorite child because that's tough, but it is your book. I know how to feel about a book or about anything that I write or even a podcast I make. So, you know, let's just go if you want to. What is your favorite part of the book? Personally.
My favorite part of the book. Gosh, I am grateful that I did really enjoy the book, and I worked with an amazing editor, Makiba Raisin, And she, oh gosh, she had such an influence on the book. And a deep friendship came out of that. But so there are so many parts that she worked with me on that I love. But my favorite part is chapter 4, What You Won't Get from Sci-C Start. Oh. Especially my passage on why it's bad for kids to be a perfect parent. Like if you could actually achieve perfection, that would actually be really harmful for your kids. So
I can see that. I can see that. I think if you're too perfect, maybe you're not human enough.
We are born into human families and raised by humans so that we can learn to love and or to work with humans and exist as humans. And our families are meant to be. Unfortunately, families aren't always this way, but they're meant to be a place where you have people who are totally committed to you, who love you endlessly, where you guys can make mistakes with each other and you can learn how to deal with imperfect people so that you can manage it out in the big world.
Love it. Great, great way to end our conversation. And now I'm going to end it my usual way, which is to thank you for being on the show, inviting everybody listening to check the notes so they can get the link to the book, get the link to your social media, your webpage, where they can learn more about you. And of course, the selfish part, which is subscribe, share this conversation with everybody, because I'm pretty sure that this is going to be a relevant conversation for at least one person, you know, maybe more than one. So again, Alison, thank you so much for this.
Thank you so much, Marco.
All right, everybody, stay tuned for more stories and more storytellers on Audio Signal Podcast. Take care, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Audio Signals Podcast, hosted by Marco Ciappelli. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then take a moment to rate this show and add it to your favorite podcast player. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and share this episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. We invite you to come back for more stories and follow Marco Ciappelli on his social media as he continues musing on stories, storytelling, and storytellers. Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSP Mag 24.